Today's shiur is entitled Understanding the Great Debate Concerning Chalav Yisrael. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Bet, in the Mishnah, Ve'elo Dvarim Shalov De Kochavim Asurim Ve'en Yisran Yisrana Chalav Shechalbo Oved Kochavim Ve'en Yisrael Ro'eh. One of the prohibitions of eating something by a Jew is described as milk that was milked by an idolater or by a non-Jew, and a Jew does not see it. Now, immediately we would ask the question, why is it that such milk would be prohibited if it was not watched by a Jew? So one might think because the milk could be exchanged from a non-kosher animal, but the Gemara immediately says there, Chalav amai nichus, what are you worried about in regards to this milk? It can't be that we're worried about an exchange of the milks, because as it happens, kosher milk is a white color, where non-kosher milk from a non-kosher animal is more of a green, or really means, like in Hilchos Nida, more of a yellow color. So one will note right off that there is a distinction to be made between the two types of milk in terms of appearance. So what then is the fear? The Gemara goes on to say that the fear is that one will mix some non-kosher milk in with the kosher milk. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Bet, where there it also quotes this idea of the prohibition unless a Jew is watching the milk. The Gemara there says as well, Tanina laha detana rabbanin, Yoshev Yisrael b'tzad edro shov t'chochavim, v'ove kochavim cholev lo, umevi lo, v'eino choshesh. The Gemara sets up the following case. It has a Tanaitic example where a Jew is allowed to be sitting next to the flock of a non-Jew, and then the non-Jew is allowed to go milk his animal for him while the Jew is just sitting there and not watching him, and he can bring him the milk, and the Gemara says he does not have to worry about it. This seems to go directly against what we previously said, that there must be supervision by a Jew in order to drink the milk that comes through the auspices of a non-Jew. The Gemara asks, Hey Chidami, how could this be? What's the case? If you're talking about that there's nothing that's impure, there are no impure animals in the flock, pshita, then it's obvious. Now, what does it mean it's obvious? So, in the Shari Dura, it's brought down two different possibilities. One possibility says it means that it's obvious they don't need any Jew there to watch the milk anyway. So, he didn't have to watch the milk. We can know chashash. There were no non-kosher animals, and there was no chashash. Or it could mean that it's obvious, it's pshita, that it's sufficient just to have the person there, even if he didn't see it necessarily taking place. You still need the person there, even if the flock is totally made up of kosher animals. There will be relevance to this distinction we'll see with the Pre-Chadash in a few minutes. Then the Gemara continues, V'i'ika devar tameh, and if it's so that there is a non-kosher animal in the flock, Edro, amai, then why is it permitted? So why would it be permitted if you didn't see where the milk came from? Like we said, you need someone to watch it. So the Gemara concludes, Alam, the Ika devar tameh. We are talking about a case where, in fact, there are non-kosher animals running amidst the flock. V'chikai chazile. And if the person, the Jew who's sitting there, would stand up, he could see the animal being milked. V'chiyati v'lo chazile. But when he's sitting down, he's not capable of seeing it. Ma'od tema, what might you say? Kevan diyati v'lo chazile. Since when he's sitting down, he does not see what's happening. Nichus dilma maite uma'arevbeg kamashvalan. You might think that the person's not going to mix milk in this non-Jew because he knows the Jew is sitting down and he can't see what he's doing. The Gemara says, no. We learn from this rather, kevan dechikai chazile, since the person, if he would stand up, would be able to see the non-Jew and what he's doing. Irtite mirtat. So the Gemara says that therefore this instills fear into the non-Jew, below ma'arev bay, and he will not mix any non-kosher milk in with the kosher milk. This idea is critical to what we're going to see in terms of the requirements for Chal of Yisrael. We know it in kashrus in general that you do not need supervision taking place necessarily in a situation where someone's preparing food that is tamidi, where you have a person there all the time. We know that there's a concept of yotzei v'nichnas. It's enough if a person is there and then they can leave and come back again because of the fear factor that will be instilled upon the non-Jew, knowing that the Jew could walk in the door any moment. This will keep him appropriate in terms of his preparation of only kosher food. And so through here, the Gemara says that in terms of this chashash, this suspicion that maybe, again, it's just maybe, this kosher milk had some non-kosher milk put into it. So you do not need active, I would say, supervision of the milking process, we're being told. All you need is for a Jew to be there, and in so doing, he will instill fear into the non-Jew, and that itself, just his presence, without his observation of the milk, just the potential that he has to observe it, that is significant enough in order to allow for that milk to be utilized. And again, this is the Gemara. This is not some Heterim later on. This is in the Gemara already. We see the Tzura, the format for this milking taking place. The Minchat Yitzchak was asked a question. This is in Chelek Gimel, Siman Ayin Hay, concerning an individual who had to go to various milking farms, and thereby he could not necessarily get there every day, and so is this considered to be enough, like a yotzei v'nichnas, that the non-Jews who are milking don't know when he's going to come? He could come Tuesday, he could come Wednesday, he could come any day, he could come at any time. Is this considered to be enough mirsus, enough fear being instilled into the non-Jew, that we can have faith that the milk that they are milking is sufficient? And in his discussion, he confirms, first of all, that you need a Yisrael doing this. It has to be a Jew. We'll see later on some other opinions. And furthermore, he says that he does not really consider this to be sufficient. He says this is something that can be used betziruf, together with other heterim, utilized in certain circumstances, but nonetheless, it should be outside, he says, of a situation where you have a health problem. Let's say the child needs milk very badly, or some other reason why you really need that milk. But l'chachila, he says, this should not be sufficient. What about a child being the supervisor? Is this sufficient? Yavada Brura, he brings down the name of the Orchas Chaim, that the person must be 18 years old in order for his supervision over the milk to be good, or in order that he should stand there and instill the fear into the farmer that he will milk properly. And why do you have to be 18? Because, as we're saying, even though a gadol is usually defined in Judaism by 12 or 13, but in this particular case, as we said, you have to have an impact by the Jew upon the non-Jew if it's not going to frighten him, so it's not going to accomplish its goals. So thereby, the Avodah Brura, bringing the Orchas Chaim, says that one must be 18 years old. Sharim Tziyanim Lehalacha Ala Shas, in this place in Avodah Zara, Taf Lamed, as we said, Daf Lamed Hay and Daf Lamed Tet. So he says that the Ritva says that you must have an adult who knows what he's doing in order for the Shemira to have any value whatsoever. Otherwise, you cannot have any faith in a child to be able to properly oversee the milking process. Nonetheless, later on, he brings other views. For example, Meshuvah Rashba, which he says is found in the Chuvos Miyuchesot LaRamban, Siman Kufayin Zayin. So there he says that we are somich on pa'utot, on, let's say, 6 and 7 year old kids who kind of know about God and can be educated a little bit, that we see we are somich on them in regards to certain other issues like wine. And he says this is not dependent upon the edus of the katan. A katan cannot give edus. So it's not that the child said that I saw it all and everything is okay, but rather it's based upon the fact that we know that the non-Jew will be frightened because there's a Jew there, even though it's a child, from doing something wrong. It's somewhat, I would say, akin to the notion that we have in regards to Yichus Yichud, right? Can a child be in the room to thereby allow a man and a woman to be together? And we say that, yes, a child, let's say, who can talk at least, that would be permitted because children talk and the people will be afraid to violate any law knowing that the child's there and the child can spill the beans, the child could talk. So to hear it's sufficient, say, these views, if you have a child who is watching the milking process because the child is old enough in order to get the message across that something fishy was going on. The Isa Beheter, he brings down, says that you need a child who's 9 years old. Others say that it depends upon the character of the child. There are children who are, if you will, spacey and don't know what's going on even if they're 11 years old. And there are children who are 7 years old who are very much with it and can properly understand what is taking place. So it depends upon the nature of the child. But it is confirmed in Shulchan Aruch, in Yeridea, Siman Kuf Tet Vav, in the Ramah, that in fact children are capable, we do pasken that way, of being supervisors of milk in order for that chashash, again, just a chashash, to be lifted and for milk to then be consumed. The Ramah adds as well, he says, L'chadchila tzarich liyot ha-Yisrael b'tchilat ha-chaliva. At the outset of things, it's necessary for the Jew to be there from the very beginning of the milking process. And he should look into the vessel, even not just watching the event of the actual milking, but he has to look at the vessel ahead of time to make sure that there is already not non-kosher milk in there at the outset. Ramah says we even have a custom in order to try to ensure that things will be done properly, that there are proper fences and boundaries, and that is that we have the non-Jew, and it's going to be Chal Yisrael, by a Jew watching him, we have him utilize a bucket or a collecting vessel that differs from the one he usually uses for non-kosher milk. That will help again clarify the situation. Then he says, "Biavad ein lachush lecholzeh." But after the fact, he says, you don't have to worry about certain of these things. If there was some milk left over, if a person came late and he was using the regular bucket, and there was a little milk in there. He says, you don't have to worry about it, b'diavad. And then he adds, "Ushvachot shecholvot habeimot bebeit Yisrael o bedir shalahem, kol makom she'ein beit ovei kochavim mafsik ve'ein lechush davar tamei, mutar afilu chadchila lahaniach otan lachlov, af api she'ein sham Yisrael klal." Then he has a big chiddush that he says that if a person has milking by his non-Jewish workers taking place on his soil, on his campus, that as long as there are no non-kosher animals around, and as long as there is no possibility for the person to easily go to a non-Jewish residence while he or she is working, and perhaps take milk from there, then you don't need a Jew there at all, watching the process, or even instilling fear into the non-Jew. Why is that permitted in this particular case? He says, "Demachar shehu bebeit Yisrael o b'shchunato ein lachush davar tamei." Because once you're in on Jewish premises, So that is sufficient to ensure that things are going to be done correctly. The non-Jews, they're working for the Jew, getting paid by the Jew, under the auspices of the Jew, so there's no fear in this regard. He goes on to say, like we mentioned, that a child is capable of being a supervisor. And then he says, "V'im chalva ovei kochavim miksat behemot v'lo haya sham Yisrael." If a non-Jew milked some cows, and there was no Jew there watching, v'charkach by Yisrael elachirim, and then afterwards a Jew came and watched. Achshav isman hazeh shein chalav davar tamei matzui klal. So he says, in our day where there's no really non-Jewish milk to be found at all, mutar, it would be permitted. Mihu imloba sham Yisrael adachar shenachalu kulak. If, however, the Jew came only after all of the animals had been milked, have kechalav shechalav kechavim daaser, then it would be considered to be like, just pure prohibition of the milk being milked without a Jew watching it. Afa pisheinu davar tamei beedro. And even if there is no an unkosher animal in the flock, still it's forbidden. Chalav shalav kochavim osum kelin. He further adds that the milk of non-Jews also forbids the vessels, just like treif items would. Apal pishin rak safek shema yireh badavar tamei. Even though it's only a fear that maybe he put milk in. And generally we would presume, of course, he didn't. Just a chashash. But in order to strengthen this halacha, so they said, the halacha is that the vessels that are utilized in this particular situation, so those vessels would, in fact, require kashering and have the same status as something that, as we said, came into contact with something not kosher. Interesting that Rav Moshe Stornbach in his Chubot Bam Hagot, Chelek Hei, Siman Reish Nun Hei, deals with the question that is somewhat germane to what we just saw in the Ramah. Someone coming afterwards, he was asked to Shaila, what if there's a camera that is filming the milking process? Could the Mashgiach then come afterwards and take a look at the pictures? And then that could be Chav Yisrael, as long as he saw that everything was done properly. So again, in this particular situation, you don't have the Jew watching the milking. Perhaps you could argue that you have still the idea of the fear factor being instilled to the non-Jew because he knows that everything is being videoed or pictures are being taken, and therefore it will reveal if he has put in any improper milk. So that would cover that concern. But Rav Stornbach actually says that this is not sufficient. Basically, among other reasons, because it is possible for the camera and the film to be doctored up. We know that that happens all the time today. So he says that this should be utilized. It's a good idea to utilize as an extra factor of security, of safety, to make sure absolutely that it was Chalav Yisrael without any issue. But he says that you could not use this in place of the actual watching. You could have someone watch it and then also have the film to check. Very nice. But that might help with the Yotzei V'Nichnas situation. But he says you cannot utilize this alone. That would not be sufficient. And perhaps related to this item as well, something that will now become very significant as a part of the Machlokas of Chalav Yisrael. In source number 8, as I have it here, the Melamed Lahoil in Simen Lamed Vav says, "Hachalav asur af diadinen de'ein bo davar tame mishum de'nesar b'minyan." He says, Melamed Lahoil, as to many poskim, that since the prohibition of Chalav Akum was established b'minyan by a Sanhedrin, by a certain formal Bezdin, that we know we have a principle that therefore this prohibition cannot be permitted unless there is a Bezdin that comes after it who is greater in Chachma v'minyan, and it's wisdom and its number. Some say it means it has more talmidim than the previous Bezdin. It's greater in wisdom and number. But in any event, what he's saying is that even if you could take, let's say, some type of test, maybe as we said, that's why I'm relating it with Herr Stornbach, with the picture. If you saw the picture, if you saw it in the picture, would that be sufficient? That's what Sternbach was dealing with. The Malam HaHol says that even if you could prove somehow that this milk was 100% okay, let's say it did some form of chemical test, and it proved that everything was fine with that milk, there were no impurities whatsoever that had been put into it, still, that would not allow one to drink the milk. It would still have the status of Chalav Akum. Chalav Akum is not defined by the fact that the milk has something in it, or neither is it defined as Chalav Yisrael if the milk has nothing in it. It depends upon the process, the procedure, the oversight. Without that oversight, so one has to presume, if it's not done in the way which Chazal said, that the item is forbidden, the Gzeira has not been fulfilled, even if the product could be identified, you know, could be molecularified to indicate that there was nothing in there that was improper in terms of impure milk. Now, the Pri Chadash, in his comments upon the Shulchan Aruch that we quoted before, Yoredeyasim and Kuf Ted Vav, makes some very strong statements which disagree with the view of those who hold that this is Davar Shenes Arviminyan. This is something that was forbidden and therefore it could never be permitted because it was forbidden as a Davar Shenes by a Sanhedrin. So the Pri Chadash says, giving various examples, that this is not necessarily understood correctly. Obviously, he agrees as a notion, it's in the Gemara, of a Dvar Shenes Arviminyan, something that's forbidden by one court and promulgated and therefore cannot be undone. But he says this is only true when the decree is made by the court and it is made for all of Klal Yisrael and it is accepted in all of Klal Yisrael, then that decree cannot be undone. If, however, the decree is promulgated and extends and was only meant to extend only to those communities wherein the problem which was being addressed by the Gzeira was significant, so if that's the case, so then in those communities where you never had the issue of this Gzeira applying because it wasn't relevant there, so this is not called therefore a Dvar Shebeminyan. That's only if it applied to all Klal Yisrael, a Gzeira. That you can't get rid of. But if the Gzeira only applied to certain communities and didn't apply to all of Klal Yisrael, then that Gzeira can be something where we can say Batla Gzeira B'nesha Batla Tama, that if the reason is no longer relevant, so then the Gzeira can fall. So he gives, just for example, several cases. Let's say the fear that uncovered water may have snake venom that was released into it, and maybe a sakana. So he says that that is not a situation where it was a Gzeira made for all of Klal Yisrael. There are places that didn't have snakes. There are places where there's not a problem. What kind of thing is that? Everyone has to cover up their water, even if you don't have any snakes, where you live. He said that's not an example of something that was applicable to all of Klal Yisrael. That's not a Davar Shenes Arviminyan. And therefore, if there are no snakes around anymore in a particular locale, even if there used to be, for example, then one no longer has to observe this Gzeira. Another example he gives, basing this on Tosafot, the famous view of Tosafot, we know with reference to Mayim Achronim. Mayim Achronim, even though Gemara says, Masechet Brachot, that Mayim Rishonim is Reshut, that the first water you use before you wash for bread is Reshut. It's not really obligatory, by which they mean, before I should say, it means that it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to do it. But for my machronim, the Gemara says, this is a chova. This is an absolute obligation because of the sakan involved by the sodomite salt, which one might take and put into his eyes and endanger himself as a result. So the Prechadish says, Tatosvus, we know, says that we do not have sodomite salt today, and consequently, you do not have to do Mayim Achronim. How could Tosfos say such a thing? After all, it had to be in Devash and Esar Reminyan, had to be something that was said squarely by the court, and you could not get rid of that Gzeira unless you have a greater court that comes about thereafter. And yet, Tosfos says that you are not required to do Mayim Achronim today. How could that be? So clearly, he says, because Tosfos holds, like his presentation, that in this case, where they never had sodomite salt wasn't everywhere, where they didn't have it, so the Gzeira never took hold. This was not a Gzeira, therefore, for all of Klal Yisrael. And thereby, if the reasoning is such that the Gzeira is no longer applicable, that type of Gzeira could fall, as opposed to, again, where something was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael, where that Gzeira, even if the Tom is no longer relevant, would still have to be upheld. So this is the Chiddush we will see in a moment of the Prechadash relevant to Chal of Yisrael. Because he will hold that if there are certain circumstances that have changed from the time of Chazal, so then the Gzeirah, it could be, it's possible, will no longer be germane and the prohibition would fall. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan in Yeradeya Sivan Kuf Tedvav He Tavav mentions the following. He's very strong in terms of his view of Chal of Yisrael. But he now called Panim Nibarer Delfidat Kol Rabotenu Sheivanu Afilu B'Makomot Deloshtiach Klal Devar Tame Ba'ir Ba'ofen Shein Chashash Etarur Chal of Tame. The Aruch HaShulchan makes it clear against the view that we were just looking at for the Prechadash, that even if it's absolutely sure that there is no impure animal, unkosher animal in the entire city, there's no fear whatsoever of having milk that's impure mixed with kosher milk. Mikol makom aser. Still, it's forbidden. Kisha Yisrael lo amar al kol panim mibachutz. Still, it is forbidden as long as a Jew, if he did not watch the entire milking process, at least if he was not standing there, b'shah ha-chaliva, at the time of the milking, o she-yotze v'nichnas, or he's going in and out, v'day afilu v'kata v'ketana, as we said, even a child could do this, v'ba'er od b'zeh, miyu al-kol panim ha-iser hu b'chol ofen, u'delok echad m'gdoi achronim, she'erich b'zeh la-hakel lishtot chalav shelahem, b'makon shim sham devar tameh. Oshu rachok miyamitziyut shiachluvu et hatame. He says that it's not like the view of the Achronim who say, like the Prechadash we saw, that if there's no relevance of such an animal being there or being able to be milked, it's not the custom to milk such an animal. Still, no. The application of the prohibition absolutely applies, says the Aruch HaShulchan. And then he says, as others do as well, he says, or if you have a case, shechalav tameh biyoker, or if you have a situation where you have the non-kosher milk being more expensive than the Jewish milk. So in other words, why would they want to take, let's say, camel's milk, if it's more expensive, and put it into the kosher milk and sell it to the Jewish kosher milk? Why would they do that? They'd be losing money. They could save their non-kosher milk, which is worth more, sell it to non-Jews, and make more money. Why should they mix it in with the kosher milk? This is what many argue. And there are those who bring leniencies in this case from other great sages. Because of these ideas, these attempted leniencies, you have many people in our generation who, because of our great sins, violate these laws. As we have seen and heard, they say they're doing it because some Torah scholar did it. Divrei Sofrim Medivrei Torah. And they don't understand that the words of the rabbis are chamor, or more strict than even the words of Torah. And the Torah scholar who does such things, he will have to be responsible for that great sin. And since it says in the Shulchan Aruch in the Torah that it is forbidden, and all the later authorities agreed to this, who dare show such arrogance in order to fulfill his own desires to allow such milk, and one who is careful about preserving his soul will keep a great distance from these leniencies. The Aruch HaShulchan goes on to state in Vav an amazing story. He tells a story of individuals who used to regularly drink some milk or milk product that was very thick and very rich in nature. And they used to do it kind of outside every morning, you know, like in a business type setting perhaps. And it was very delicious, you know. And one day, they finally asked the question to the owner of this place that was selling these goods, how he makes them, how they're so delicious. These melchic, simple melchic type of drinks. And he said that he goes to a little store, and there at that store, it's a meat store. And in the meat store, he asks for meat that includes, he says, a great deal of brain meat. And he takes it and he mixes it up and he pulverizes it and he puts it together with all the milk and he cooks it all together. And this is how it gets. It's very rich texture and flavor. The Ruach HaShulchan said when these people heard this, they fell on their faces in recognition of the greatness of Chazal and what laws that they made. And they yelled and they screamed, how could this be happening? How could they accept this? How could they have made such a mistake? And Ruach HaShulchan adds, he says that he has heard, he has accepted this from his Rebbeim, from his tradition, Shekol Gzeirat Chachamim Levad Tamim Haniglot She'esh Yeshod Harbet Tamim Kimusim Shelo Giluotam. He says that aside from over whatever the reasons are that Chazal established a prohibition in the case of Gezeira, it does not necessarily mean that every reason was given for the prohibition. They just gave perhaps the main reason or the main reasons. So even if he says the reason has changed, and this is, by the way, said by many others in the name of the Gra, that he's the one who said this, that even if the reason has changed, it could be that there were other reasons why Chazal established something, and that's why that would make sense. Why Batla Gzeira, Taima Lo Batla Gzeira, that if the reason is no longer germane, it doesn't mean that the Gzeira should fall, because the Gzeira might have had other reasons behind it, which were not the primary reasons that Chazal nonetheless wanted it for the Gzeira to be observed anyway, and that these other lesser known reasons, which they did not reveal, these other reasons would thereby still be relevant to the observance of the Gzeira. I might add, just as an aside with this powerful situation, the Ruach HaShulchan castigating those individuals who would drink this milk product and then think everything's fine, and found out how terrible, in fact, their evaluation had been of the situation. That there's a famous case, some may know it, of a case of a person on an airplane, and he had to get up for a moment, and when he came back to his seat, he realized that because he had a meat dish, and there's a halacha called basar shenel amin ha'ayin, since he had opened his airline meal and left it open and left for a moment to use the bathroom or wherever else, and he came back, that he then recognized he could not eat it because it could be the meat was exchanged. And so he sat there, and his neighbor, wasn't Jewish, said, how come you're not eating? And he kind of said, well, I'm not that hungry. And went a few more minutes and found a non-Jew again, asked him, I don't understand, why are you eating it? He said, okay, so look, you want me to tell you? I'll tell you. The Jewish person said, I'm not eating it because we have a law that we have to identify things as kosher, certainly in terms of meat. And therefore, you can't take your eye off of it because, you know, you can't identify if it was the kosher meat or not once it's been exposed and it's kind of there without its packaging. And so I left for a moment and I came back and I realized, I forgot about this law, that because I left the meat exposed, that now I cannot eat it. I know you think that sounds ridiculous, but this is what happened. So the non-Jew said, not only is it not ridiculous, it's almost like the story, the famous Gemara, where it talks about Shimon ben Shetach, who makes someone return a diamond to the non-Jew that he found around his donkey. And the non-Jew replies, "Great is the God of Shimon ben Shetach. What a kiddush Hashem." Because, but he kept this halacha of returning that object. And so too here, the idea is that the non-Jew, he said to the Jew, you know, it's not so crazy what your rabbi said according to this law. Because in fact, I never had tasted kosher meat before. So I actually took some of your kosher meat and I replaced it with some of my non-kosher meat instead on your plate. So thereby, in fact, you were 100% right in keeping that law as it should be kept. Another such example, my wife, when she had one of her wedding showers, it was held at a country club, which was not kosher. It was held there because her grandmother insisted that it be given at that place, because she had a connection to the place. And she said it would be vegetarian, and there would be absolutely no problem that my wife, of course, at the time, my fiancé, could eat there. But my fiancé said nothing doing. She can't eat anything there, a drink of water, whatever else. And she wouldn't eat the whole time at her own shower. She didn't eat. And everyone kind of ribbed her for it. They said, "Oh, come on, come on. Everything's fine. It's vegetarian." And still she wouldn't eat. Finally, at the end of the shower, the cook came out and everyone clapped. They said, "Oh, the food was so delicious, especially the fish. Can you tell us, how did you make that fish so delicious?" And he said, "Oh, sure. You see, before I make that fish, I first soak it in chicken broth. Obviously non-kosher." And my wife looked at everyone and said, "Uh-huh, yep, she was right. Such things can happen." And again, the Aruch HaShulchan proves it with this terrifying story about people eating actually fleishik, non-kosher fleishik, in the milk product they were consuming, because they did not do proper diligence with reference to ensuring the kashrut of that milk product. In source number 11 that I have in my sheet, the Tshuva ben Hagog, again Rav Schornbach, this time in Chelek Aleph, Simen Taf Mem Aleph, puts the statement as follows to show you how clear he is that this is something that must be observed carefully. He says, "Yesh lakpid ma'od al iser chalav akum." One has to be very careful concerning the prohibition of consuming non-kosher or non-Jewish milk. "Va'ad mor milubavitch." And he says, and the great Rebbe of Lubavitch, he means, he says, Rav Yosef Yitzchak, the previous Lubavitch Rebbe, before the one who passed away now, or Menachem Mendel. So he says, "Kabbalah v'yado shashotech chalav akum pogem etzlo ha'emuna." He says that he held that he has a Kabbalah, a tradition, probably based on mysticism, that anyone who drinks non-Jewish milk, his soul, his faith, is affected by it. Now, you can imagine, and that's why, of course, Chabad and many others are so mockbeat on this. First off, your Rebbe tells you this, you believe it. But secondly, if the thought is that this is something, this food, that affects your soul, that affects your faith, in other words, it's almost saying if you drink non-kosher milk, so you're an apikoros, you become an apikoros. So you can imagine why people are so makpid about these halachas, and that, for example, in the case of Chabad and many others, are makpid as well on the kalim, just like it said in the Ramah on his comments in Shulchan Aruch. So far we have seen very strong statements about the observance of Chol Yisrael, how it should be kept properly with someone overseeing the milking process. We are now going to look at a series of leniencies that are put forth for Chalav Yisrael with their rebuttals from others who disagree, and it's going to get very, very messy and very, very agitated, you will see, within the debate that goes on here. And we start by looking at the Har Tzvi, Yeridei HaSiman Kuf Gimel, famous Har Tzvi. People are lenient, some people buy milk powder, which is not liquid milk, for various reasons, because presumably the Gzeira did not include milk powder, which is made in a different way. The Har Tzvi is quoted as being the big makil in this. The Chazon Ish, I see, in Yeridei HaSiman Mem Aleph, in his discussion, is machmir. He holds there is no difference between the powdered milk and regular milk. But the Har Tzvi writes as follows, Yeridei HaSiman Kuf Gimel. Ra'iti b'tashbats, he said he saw in various sources, he quotes others as well, Yesh lamar shlo chashashu razal ela l'chalav gamla shederech anshe olam machalavam. There are those who say these poskim, that Chazal only worried about camel milk, which was milked at that time in that part of the world. Aval chamurta v'susia, but donkey milk or horse milk, lo shchichi l'mechalev lahu. People don't milk those animals. V'hi milta d'lo shchiach. So it's something that has no application. V'kachetav harashba, and also their Rishonim will say it. Same thing. D'makom shelo shchiche gemalim, that in a place where you don't have any camels, these you say, lo gazer abadet. There was no decree made, and you can drink mamish milk that came right from non-Jews, from a farm, from wherever you want, without any supervision. And Har Tzvi says, this is in the mid-20th century, he says it's known that in the United States, that, in fact, he says, "Ein gemalim ve'ein lachush lechalav gamol v'shel chamor v'shel sus." There are no camels in the United States. You don't have to worry about the camels. You don't have to worry about the donkeys. You don't have to worry about the horses. Oh, chazir! You don't have to worry about the pigs. Why we have pigs? Why should you have to worry about the pigs? All right, so he says, "Delo shchiach shichalavu otam," because it's not again germane that people are going to milk pigs. And even if you're going to argue that they have pigs and some people milk them, it is so minuscule. He says that it's not even something to be concerned about. He says, "Mikol shekain," and all the more so, "benidan dinan," in our situation, "sheyesh pikuach memshalti," where there is a government official, an appointee, so he argues for the first time we see a view who says that if you use a government official, well, he does not allow it necessarily here to stand on its own, but he says that if you have a situation where you don't have the relevancy of the Gzeira anyway because you don't have such animals being milked, and all the more so, he says, when you have a government official. So he gives value and importance to the idea of having a government official overseeing this, making sure it's only cow's milk. He says, all the more so should this be permitted. So we have our first heter from the Har Tzvi, that even quoting Rishonim, that the prohibition only applied in a place where you had such animals. It did not apply all across the board. This is, again, as well, in harmony with the view of the Pri Chadash that we presented, that in fact this indeed was his perspective on things. The Aruch HaShulchan, which we quoted previously, he says in his Rashi script that comes after his main body, the paragraph, concerning pigs, "Beyichud shamati sheba America yesh rabim me'umot sheshotim chalav chazir." He said he heard in America, of course he didn't see it himself, so it's whatever report he received that he was hearing. He heard in America that in fact they have many, many pigs, and people drink much of their milk. So he says certainly it's a fear in America. However, this would seem to be problematic just in terms of the Lamaisa if this is so. I thank my friend Rabbi Dov Fisher, who some time ago, discussing Chav Yisrael on our rabbinic forum, mentioned two sources from newspapers, which I now quote to you. One is from the Washington Post, which is from September 27th, 2006. There, an article says that pig milk contains about 6.8% of fat, compared with about 3.25% in cow milk. So it's quite rich, right? It's more than twice as rich than cow's milk, pig's milk is. But sows make very little milk, so pig milk has poor commercial prospects. Furthermore, pigs are not ruminants with four stomach digestive tracts, so their fat doesn't contain the short-chain fatty acids produced by ruminants' intestinal bacteria. Those fatty acids are what gives cow, sheep, and goat milk their distinctive flavors. So pig milk wouldn't taste very good, except, of course, to piglets. The London Times, August 22nd, 02, says one of the main reasons why pigs are not milked is the problem of letdown. A sow lets her milk flow only for a matter of seconds, and you would have to be a mighty quick milker to draw out the milk before she turns off the taps. Secondly, sows have a lot of teats compared with the two that sheep and goats have, or four that cows of normal dairy animals have. And nobody has bothered to devise a way of milking a dozen or more teats at a time within those few seconds of letdown. Thirdly, pigs are considered to be unclean in many of the countries in which humans first came up with the strange idea of drinking the milk of mammals other than their own mothers. The real practical reason, though, he says, for not milking pigs is those short legs. You cannot get a bucket under their teats without standing the sow on two stools. And as you can imagine, they don't like that very much. So you see from reality that, as opposed to the Aruch HaShulchan, that in America, milking pigs was never really something that caught on, and certainly today, as you see, it would make no sense commercially. It makes no sense practically. It can't be done well. And consequently, again, there's room for leniency, especially with the Pri Chadash, the Har Tzvi, according to the Rishonim, to drink so-called regular milk, milk that we would not generally identify as Chal of Yisrael, and avoid the prohibition as we see. Yechavidas from Rav Yosef and Chelek Dalad Simon Membet also brings some lenient views in this regard. The Tshuvas HaRadvaz, he says in Simon Ayin Hay, also holds, like the Pri Chadash, also says in places where you do not have such animals or you do not have such milking in the case of such animals, or, as we have said, that the price for such milk of the non-kosher animal is more expensive, so that one would not put it into the mixture with the kosher milk. In all of those situations, he says that it is permitted for one to buy such milk that is milked by a non-Jew, even if a Jew does not see it. And then he says, "V'chena minag pashut be'ir Amsterdam." So he says, was it the minhag in Amsterdam and maybe other places? And so too, he brings the view of the pre-Tohar, and he says that even if you have non-kosher animals within the flock, again, in his case, since the milk of non-kosher animals was sold at a higher price, So as a result, it would not be mixed in with kosher milk. And he says, certainly, therefore, it would be permitted. So again, we are seeing all of these views based initially, as we said, on the pre-chadash, and the, if it's not a divarshin esar b'minyan, which would say that we do not have non-kosher animals, and where you do not have a situation where people would be feared to mix the milk, like the milk for from non-kosher animals is more expensive. So in those situations, they say specifically, one could be lenient. It comes down very strongly in favor of the traditional Chol of Yisrael. He says that there is milk throughout the world that is in fact not from kosher animals. He quotes a story from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, not the Rav's father, but the grandson of Rav Chaim, who describes a case when he was in Switzerland, in a place where there were great mountains, that he saw one time a woman coming down from the mountains in very hot temperatures, and she had two buckets of milk that she was bringing with her down from the high mountains. And he asked her, it's a very hot day, how is it that you keep the milk from becoming spoiled? And she answered that as a result, she puts a little bit of donkey milk into the other milk, and that helps preserve it. So obviously you see that, says the Chelkat Yaakov, that such a thing can still happen. Of course, I'm not denying that. The pre-chadash and others would say, well, in that situation, if you have a donkey and you have milk that's being taken from donkeys, okay, so then in that situation you can't do it. But this would not affect his hat there in situations where you don't have such a reality. I might add, though, that also the Chelkat Yaakov further adds a statement which says as follows. This is in Siman Lamed Chet. He says, Midor Dorot, he says, in all places, at all times, he brings a few exceptions in the parentheses, Anu Noagin Leiser. Our custom is to be strict and prohibit milk that is not watched and supervised by a Jew. V'yalzeketav Shapir Chatam Sofer, and there he quotes the Chatam Sofer in Simen Kuf Zayin, where he says, the nimsa kulo chumro, the ishchashash neder dioraita. So it's interesting when he points out that the Chatam Sofer mentions that even though it would seem to be more lenient if you'd say that there are some places where such animals that are non-kosher do not exist, so therefore there should not be a prohibition in those particular places, like the pre-chadash wanted to say. But the Chatam Sofer says that since we know the minhag is that people are strict anyway, so it turns out that this leniency actually becomes a stricture. How so? Because the fact is that even though in those places, most of them, Jews could have utilized the leniency, he says they didn't. They accepted a nether upon themselves, like a vow, that even though it's not really shaykh to us anymore, we're still going to accept this prohibition upon ourselves. So it has the din of a nether, which is a Torah idik. Now obligation, which means that if you say there are places where really this is not germane, and the Jews have accepted it anyway, that leniency that their animals are not there, the Jews have accepted it, in fact, elevates the stringency of the matter. And then he adds, and by the way, the Chatam Sofer, I recall, says a similar thing in regards to another halacha. Some of you may know, when he mentions by Shavuos, the fact that we have a second day of Shavuos, the Chatam Sofer says, why is that necessary? After all, we know that we keep 2 days of Yom Tov, even though now we know when the second day is, Sapi Cheshbon, in terms of calculating, because Minhag Avotenu Viadenu, because we have the custom of our forefathers in our hands, so we continue with their custom, even though the reason is no longer relevant, at least according to one understanding of the Gemara. So if that's the case, he says, what about by Shavuos? By Shavuos, everyone knows when Shavuos is. We start counting the second night of Pesach, and by the time you know you get pretty far along, you understand when Shavuos is going to be. There's no doubt anymore. Everyone knows when Shavuos is going to be because it's after you've counted 49 days of the Omer, then comes Shavuos. So since when you know Shavuos is going to be at that particular time, so why do you have to keep a second day Shavuos? The Chatam Sofer answers that really the reason we keep a second day of Shavuos is therefore because of Lo Plug, just so there should not be a distinction between that second day of Yom Tov and all other second days of Yom Tov. But he says that actually, therefore, this is a special decree that was made to keep the second day of Shavuos. It was not a minhag avotenu b'yadeinu. It was a special decree, so it shouldn't be different from the other holidays. So it turns out that Shavuos' second day is really more strict than the other second days, which are only al pi minhag, even though it would have seemed that Shavuos would be more lenient, that you'd only have to keep one day because you know when it's going to come because of Shiras HaOmer. So it turns out that the second day of Shavuos is actually more strict, even though it seems like it should have been more lenient. Just like here, the Chatam Sofer, I'm saying, has the same perspective, that even though it should have been more lenient in regards to the notion of not having non-kosher animals to allow the milk, but no, because the Jews accepted the prohibition anyway in that situation, so it turns out that that becomes a Torahitic obligation instead of the rabbinic obligation that was put in the Mishnah concerning the supervision of non-Jewish or the milk of non-Jews. I might add that he says at the end of this statement, Sim Lamed Chet, that the Chazon Ish does not even touch upon this, he says, in his statement. Now, the Chazon Ish we're going to see in 1 second, Yoredeya Simen Mem Aleph. But again, the Chalkat Yaakov says that the Chatam Sofer does not touch upon this statement by the Chatam Sofer. The Chazon Ish does not touch the statement of the Chatam Sofer. And also he says, the Chalkat Yaakov does, and then says the Chalkat Yaakov that, as we will see, the Chazon Ish's perspective, which we will present in one moment, he says, only applies by what the Chazon Ish's main discussion was in the source we just gave, which is namely the question of the use of powdered milk. There are those who want to say that the use of powdered milk should be permitted as opposed to regular milk for various reasons, but one of them being strongly that when we said something was nesav minyan, something was totally forbidden under the rubric of the gzeira, it was only something that was forbidden at the time. Now already if you add to the fact that that was not existent at the time, so that would not come under an inyan of Nesar B'minyan. And if it was not Nesar B'minyan, so then already they might agree with the Pre-Chadash that there are other reasons to be lenient where there are not a significant skinim elements to be machmir, like the presence of non-kosher animals. But it's interesting that again, the Chalkas Yaakov of the Chazon Ish was just involved in a debate, the Shaklan Tarya. He never met, practically speaking, to allow what? Now we shall see. Because the Chazon Ish, something which was surprising to me, and I'm sure to many who are listening, says, B'shiyesh pikuach ha-memshala ala chalav shelo yarvu chalav tamei, when you have an appointed individual from the government who is overlooking the dairy process, the milking of the cows, so that you do not have impure milk placed with the cow's milk, and they can expect that they will receive a fine or some type of penalty if they put in non-kosher milk and exchange it. Yeshma kol namar de have kishvachot hacholvot demirtatot. You could say, as we saw in the Ramah, that that's equivalent to the situation where within a certain setting, the case in the Ramah was where you had the permissibility of non-Jewish servants to do the milking in a Jewish atmosphere, even though the Jew was not specifically watching, because it was being done in his home or on his land. That was enough to expect, as we said, if there was no non-Jewish home next to it or intervening, that the non-Jew would only do as he's being told by his Jewish employer, and he would not violate in this particular situation. And so too, says the Chazon Ish, it's the same thing if you have the instilling of fear of a certain psychological type, as we're talking about, by the fact that you have someone overseeing the dairy industry from the government, that itself is sufficient. Let us not forget that it is only a chashash in the first place that non-kosher milk might be mixed with the kosher milk. It's only a chashash. So it should not be so shocking, therefore, it seems to me, if the Chazon Ish says that once you have the most minimal form of supervision that wants to ensure through a monetary fine that this milk will only be of a certain type, that is sufficient, says the Chazon Ish, in order to meet our needs, that milk can now be consumed. Now, the Chalkat Yaakov says that the Chazon Ish never addressed the Chatam Sofer's chumrah of the fact that the Jews have accepted upon themselves the prohibition of Chalav Akum, even in a case where there are no non-kosher animals, and therefore it should be more strict. It's not true. The Chazon Ish does address it. He says, Masha katav chatam sofer b'divrei hasharidura d'nesar chalav amivurer she'en bo tarobet chalav tamei tavua. That he says that it's surprising, the chatam sofer would say, that such milk, when there is no impure item in the milk itself, but because it was not supervised specifically by a Jew, that it's going to be forbidden anyway. He says that's not the case. Sharei pirsho pri chadash, dehudavka beyesh beir chalav tame, varei huvka beyad aku machalav, v'chayshinen shema irev chalav tame. He says, but the whole fear is, he says, that there's going to be a chance that milk may be mixed with the kosher milk from non-kosher animals. Well, imein b'chol ha'ir lo chamura v'lo gamla v'lo chazira. But he said, if there are in this particular city or place, there are no donkeys, there are no camels, there are no pigs, v'lo susia, no horses, lo shamanu le'esur. The Chazon Ish says, then we have never heard that people would forbid the drinking of milk in a place where such animals do not exist. So as opposed to the Chatam Sofer, who says that even in those places the Jews have accepted upon themselves, the Chazon Ish says specifically it's not true. They never accepted the prohibition in those circumstances where the animals were not known to exist in their place, and therefore there was no fear of drinking non-kosher milk. So this view of the Chazon Ish precedes that, and as we indicated, it was also mentioned as a svara in the Har Tzvi earlier. All this precedes the Igros Moshe, who is known to be the big Mekil in this situation. I might add that the Chazon Ish's view is quite controversial because, as we already mentioned, the Chalkas Yaakov, who says that it was only said within the realm of discussion and not halacha lemaisa. So too, the Tshuvot on Hagot of Rav Sturnbach also mentions similarly that it is his view that the Chazon Ish only permitted this in a situation, he says, where there was a child who was sick or someone really needed the milk in a shad of chak, but that he did not allow for this in a normative situation. This is not only said by the Chulos ben Hagos, as I am mentioning here. And by the way, that statement, the Chulos ben Hagos, about the Chazan Ish, is made in Chulos ben Hagos Yoredei Bet Shin Ayin Gimel. So not only does he object to the Chazan Ish, Rav Schoenbach, but he furthermore adds that, or I should take the Chelkat Yaakov that adds, the Chelkat Yaakov furthermore states in Siman Lamed Chet that we quoted previously, that the same Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the grandson of Rav Chaim, asked the Chazan Ish specifically concerning this. And the Chazan Ish's answer was, Bezel Asham, Ma'od Yomru Alai, what else will they say about me? Bekarov Yomru Alai, She'ani Matir, Chas V'Shalom Gamei Shadish. In the near future they're going to say that also I permitted an Eish of Ish, I permit people who are married to get married to someone else. So the Chelkat Yaakov says there is no way that the Chazan Ish permitted it. You hear right here that he says that he never said such a thing, and he claims that he never even allowed it for a child. Not even in the Shas HaFak did the Chazan Ish allow it. And despite that, if you look, as I've quoted you, into the Chazan Ish, Yoredei Siman Mem Aleph, that's exactly what he seems to say. It's in the context of talking about powdered milk, but it is clear that he is saying this as a lashon of heter in order to be lenient in this particular situation when you have a government official overseeing what is taking place. So the Chazan Ish is controversial, but I know that there are those who uphold it as it seems to be read. I've heard the name of Rebelsky from the OU, that he also has presented such a view in Eretz Yisrael to others, try to argue that it's not just of Moshe, as we'll see in a second, in the United States, but also the Chazan Ish, who permitted this particular situation. Now, Rav Moshe, as we said, who is certainly popular-wise, the big leniency, this is in Yoredei Aleph Siman Mem Zayin. This is written in 1954, which may have significance. There, Rav Moshe states that if you have a government appointee over the milking process, and that if there's a penalty so that the dairy company will be closed down if they are found to be violating. So he says, Vadai, Mirtite, Milarev Yesh. He says, certainly they are afraid to therefore mix any other milk. Yesh Tam Gadol Ahatir. And he says, therefore, there is great reason to be lenient. Af below Shitada Prichadash. This is not even using the Prichadash. The Prichadash, we said already, there are views that hold, if you don't want to Devar Shnes of a Minyan, that the Gzeira was never made for people who did not have non-kosher animals, or where they did not milk non-kosher animals, or, as we said, where the price for non-kosher milk was more than the price for kosher milk. But you don't need all that. You don't even need the Prichadash. He says you don't need to use the Prichadash. It's okay. He says, what you have here is, in effect, I'm going to say, what Moshe is saying, Chalav Yisrael. Why? He says, Mishum da'ikar di'yediya brurahu kiri'iya mamish. Rav Moshe says that if you have the government official there, it's considered to be like we have absolute knowledge that this was done correctly. And mamish, it's like the person is seeing the milking of the animal. And it's not that you had to have a Jew milk the animal. It's not some based on some Zeres HaKasuv here. It's just that Chazal wanted to ensure that you had the necessary fear placed upon the one who's doing the milking, that he would not try to put in some non-kosher milk. And in this scenario, says Rav Moshe, you in fact have it. He goes on to say, that in the same source, that, again, this is mamish, like you're watching it, and with the penalty, that's enough of a fear factor. And it was not included, therefore, he says, in the prohibition of Chazal. And furthermore, he says, v'zehu gam l'chulei alma, de'ein tam l'chlot b'zeh. Moshe says very strongly, this should be according to anyone's viewpoint. I'm not just giving a leniency here, and I'm saying everyone else who disagrees with it, okay, that's fine. They can disagree. He's saying no one should disagree with this. There's no reason whatsoever for anyone to disagree with this. Ulachen, harotze lismoch lahakel, yesh lo tam gadol. Therefore, someone who wants to be lenient and not use a Jew specifically watching it, he says there is great reason that he's permitted to do it. Ukemoshu mekilim bazeh harobene adam shomrei Torah v'gam harbe rabbanim. Very important to our cause. We will have this statement again later against Rav Moshe, but Rav Moshe says that just like most people who keep the Torah, including many rabbanim, many talmid chachamim, also drink what's now known, what we're calling here, this milk of Chalav Stam, which is watched by a dairy official from the government. V'chas v'shalom lomar shosin shelo kadin. And God forbid that anyone should say they are doing not in accordance with the strict halacha. Aval mikol makom, nonetheless, lebalei nefesh, to certain great people, minarawi lahachmir, it's fitting to be strict. V'ein bazeh mishum yuhura. And in being strict, one is not being arrogant. V'kach ani noheg lahachmir la'atzmi. So too, I am personally machmir about only drinking milk that specifically had a Jew watch the supervision. About misherot la'akel who ose kedina. But someone who wants to be lenient is doing in accordance with the law. V'ein lahachshivo kimezalzel b'surim. And no one should consider him to be someone who is light and treats Chazal's decrees in an improper way. So, it's interesting, the statement by Moshe that Balni Nefesh should be Machmir. I would just like to indicate something I once heard from Rav Schechter. He said that Rav Schechter and Rav Willig, when they would be learning together, the Chavrusa, so they would come about things in the Mishnah Berurah where the Mishnah Berurah often says, we know, Baal Nefesh Yachmir Latzmo. A Baal Nefesh should be strict in this particular situation. Now what does that mean? Rav Schechter and Rav Willig would say, oh, Baal Nefesh, it means like the Chavetz Chaim, it means like Rav Moshe, it means like Rav Soloveitchik, Rav David Lipschitz. No, Baal Nefesh should be Machmir. Today, Rav Schechter said, everyone says they're a Baal Nefesh. Everyone thinks when it says in the statement here, a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir, and like in Rav Moshe that we're reading now, that it means that you should be Machmir. It does not mean that. It said a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir. And there's so many people we know who are not Baal Nefesh, and so many other things, and suddenly here they're Baal Nefesh. If, for example, and I have this online as well, in when it comes to drinking on Purim. So, you know, suddenly everyone's so Machmir. But there's so many Shitas, the Meiri, the Bein Ephraim, and others, even the Mishnah Berurah, and Rav Avad Yosef, and going through Ramah, that say that one should not get drunk, but just drink a little more than usual. But suddenly, oh, it seems like everyone's a Baal Nefesh, everyone's a big Machmir. Everyone is drinking to the ultimate degree to fulfill the Adel Yada. So where does everyone get this desire to become so frum from suddenly? So I'm just indicating that although Rav Moshe says that a Baal Nefesh should be Machmir, does not mean that every person who can should be Machmir. It means that individuals on a very high level should be Machmir. Maybe if he's on a high level, all is at the Hanahagas, he should be Machmir here as well. Rav Moshe in Simen Mem Chet also has a discussion of this inyan. Someone challenged him that there wasn't enough of a penalty to really cause the government official or cause the dairy association or the dairy company to have any fear because, again, they just pay a minor fine. Rav Moshe says that's okay, that's sufficient. it's efficient. And if they were going to have people, he said, milking horses and camels and pigs or whatever else, he said, first of all, those people probably wouldn't want to do it because it's against the law, and they would have to pay them extra to do it, where, again, also they're going to be losing money. They wouldn't do it, Ramosha says. It's not practical. Then they'd have to presume that the people who are doing it are not going to tell. And if they tell, so then for sure the government will close them down. So basically, Ramosha says that he thinks sufficient fear is engendered by the government official, and that is enough. In Yeridea Bet, Simon Lamed Hay, this is already written in 1970, Ramosha again discussing the same situation. He was asked concerning the heads of day schools and yeshivas, should they give their children, their students, what we would say is traditional Chal of Yisrael with a Jew supervising, or is it sufficient to just give Chal of Stam in accordance with Rav Moshe's leniency that this milk we know will be okay because you had a government official and government rules which oversaw the milking process? And strangely, if you would have asked me, I would have said, of course, Rav Moshe made the point so clearly that to, in fact, have the government official, he said, is Yediyah Brura, don't forget. This is absolute knowledge of what is taking place, and consequently, it should be okay. It's like Re'iyah Mamash, he said. It's like we really saw it. So it should be okay. But, in fact, Rav Moshe, surprisingly, says that even if it's going to cost more money, that no, the individuals in charge should get the Chal of Yisrael for an educational purpose, he says, in order to teach the students that even if you have a small chashash concerning the issue of halacha, that it's worth it to put out more money in order to fulfill the halacha properly. What's the pli atzuma about this is that, as I'm indicating, Rav Moshe said, but there's no chashash here. He said it's Yediyah Brura. So why does he take this particular example where he should go beyond what's required and be machmir in the terms of Chal Yisrael? It's very strange. He concludes by saying, Aval b'mekamot harichokot she'ein sham companies. He says, however, you have in outward places outside of New York and other places where you do not have the possibility to supervise in terms of Chal Yisrael, he said, it's very difficult for the entire community to uphold a Chal Yisrael standard of the traditional sense of the Jew watching it. He says, so in that situation, afli yechidim, in that situation, even great individuals, even Bali Nefesh, he says, should not be strict in that particular situation, it seems to me. Now, Rav Moshe again says a similar thought. He mentions also in the case of a bakery in Toronto, this is in Yeridea Chelet Dalet, Simon Hay, he says there that for many years this bakery utilized Chal of Yisrael milk of the traditional sense, we're calling it. And because of the expense that has now come about, they want to use Chal of Stam in accordance with Rav Moshe's leniency. Now what would you think that Rav Moshe would say? I would think, well, it's parnasa purposes. It's understood. It's Yediyah Brura. It's clear that this milk is okay, like he said. Tamid HaChachamim v'Bnei Torah are somech on this milk, he said. And yet, what does Rav Moshe say? No, you shouldn't do it. He says you shouldn't do it. Why shouldn't you do it? Because he says it's like a neder. It's like they've agreed to do this for many, many years. They've taken it upon themselves that this is what they should do. And it's a good thing they have done to be strict this way. And thereby they should continue to do it. And all those in the city who can should support this bakery in what they're doing. Again, why should Rav Moshe say such a thing if the other milk, Chal of Stam, with a supervisor from the government, is perfectly acceptable, he said. Why should he be so strict? In fact, to such a degree, let me just add, that he says in Simon Mem Zayin that we quoted before, actually, this is again, Mem Zayin in Yeridea Aleph, So there Rav Moshe makes an amazing statement. He says that if a person took a vow to be strict upon himself, and he knows that regular milk is okay, but he's going to be strict and only have Chalav Yisrael, and then he finds he can't keep that. So then Rav Moshe says so he needs a Hataras Nedarim. He has to undo that vow. That was a legitimate vow, and he has to undo that vow. If, however, says Rav Moshe, you have a situation where a person thought that you are not allowed to drink Chalav Stam with the government supervisor. So therefore, an individual said, I'm going to drink Chalav Yisrael because I know that Chalav Stam is Aser. And now that person finds it's hard to keep Chalav Yisrael, and he wants to only drink normal, regular milk. Rav Moshe says he does not need a Hataras Nedarim in that situation. Why not? Because what he did was just a mistake. He was just wrong. It's like if someone would say, you know, they took it upon themselves not to eat bakos. They're not going to eat bakos because, you know, you're not allowed to eat bakos because it's like bacon. It's shush. What do you mean? It's not bacon. It's a vegetable, chemical type of stuff. So of course you can eat bakos. There's no Easter on eating bakos. So too, Rav Moshe says that drinking regular milk, there's no Easter on drinking regular milk. So you thought that you could only drink Chalav Yisrael, you can't drink regular milk. And now you want to drink regular milk, you don't need a Hataras Nedarim. You were just mistaken. That's Stala Taus. Because regular milk, again, he says, is considered to be of the status of Chalav Yisrael. And yet, as we've indicated, Rav Moshe still says that if one can, in the case of the day schools, in the case of the Baal Nefesh, in the case of that bakery, which always had the custom to do it, if one can, one still should observe the traditional sense of Chalav Yisrael, i.e. that it's supervised by a Jew, or there's a Jew at least there, as we said, to instill the fear upon the individuals who are doing the milking. Now, why would Rav Moshe say such a thing? It's a plea. His argument is so good that why would he leave any room for one to still have to be machmir in this? So I would just like to suggest that we have, I think, an indication of this from another tshuva of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe in Aruch Chaim, Bet Mem Gimel, one of his many tshuvas concerning the mechitza. There he says as follows. Someone asked him, who had a shul with a balcony, if it was now permissible, because the women especially wanted to come downstairs on the same level as the men, there'd be a high mechitza, let's say a 10-foot mechitza, and the women would now be downstairs instead of being in the balcony, and that would make it easier for the women, among other things. They said they wouldn't have to walk the stairs every Shabbos. So what would you think Rav Moshe would answer? I would have said that of course that's permitted, to take the balcony and to make it into a downstairs mechitza, where the mechitza is especially going to be a high mechitza, let's say. So who would object to that? Every mechitza in America is like that almost. It doesn't have a balcony. Well, what's wrong with that? So Rav Moshe, of course, says no. It's no good. Why is it no good? Because, says Rav Moshe, because the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Aleph, describes the Tikkun Gadol, the great change that was made in the architecture of the Beis HaMikdash that required now a mechitza, because in order to keep Kalus Rosh away from the men and women mixing with each other, the Gemara concludes that a balcony was instituted. So therefore, Rav Moshe says that even though it's true, you 100% fulfill the obligation of having the Beit Knesset, like the Mikdash, with a separation between men and women, if you have the separation on the same floor. But nonetheless, because the way it was done in the Beis HaMikdash was through the idea of a balcony, then it must be that Chazal saw that as being preferable to some minor degree than to do it in another fashion. And as I understand it, he's saying therefore one should follow the tzura of the gzeira that Chazal established In the case of Mechitza, therefore, you should have a balcony. And by the way, he mentions at the end, he says, don't tell me women have trouble climbing the stairs. If they really want to get up there, they'll get up there. Like I imagine he means like if they had a good Kiddush, they'll go up there. So he says that L'chadchila, he tells the rabbi that he should do everything he can, even if it costs more money, to maintain the balcony, unless his job's on the line, whether he's not required to. So too, in the case of Kol Yisrael, I think Rav Moshe is saying that as the tzura of the Gzeira kind of follow the particular format, that's the format, if possible, that one should follow, even though drinking the other milk under the government supervision is perfectly okay. I do want to indicate that even according to Rav Moshe, let us remember that all this applies with his heter only in a situation where one has government supervision of the milk. So, for example, in other countries in Europe where they may not have such supervision, or, for example, I have members from my shul whose family lives in South America, and here they drink regular milk, but when they go to South America, they say there's no government supervision in the particular countries they live, and thereby there they only drink Kol Yisrael. So Rav Moshe's heter does not apply everywhere, but as we said, it certainly applies in the United States, and yet nonetheless, Rav Moshe says, if possible, one should strive for the exact surah that Chazal established in the Gzeira. It could be, although Rav Moshe doesn't say it, that maybe psychologically he is concerned with the Gra that we quoted earlier, the Yeruch HaShulchan and so many others quote, the fact that the Gra said that even if a Gzeira is no longer relevant, it would seem because of the reason of that Gzeira no longer being relevant, that the Gra said that there were many reasons why Chazal made a Gzeira, and even if the main one which was revealed to us is not there, it does not mean the other ones do not apply. So, for example, just thinking that through a little more, it could be that Chol Yisrael, as Mefarshim explain on Gemara Avodah Zarah, where the main point of the separation of non-Jewish food items from Jewish food items is to create a distance between a Jew and non-Jew, like by Stam Yenam and by bread and other items, that so too maybe this would come over the rubric to some degree of secondarily creating this separation, even though the main reason is no longer germane the fear of milk having non-Jewish milk put into it. So perhaps that's how we can understand Rav Moshe to somewhat of a deeper degree. In the Tshuvas on Haggas of Rav Shornbach, Yerodei Bet Shinayin Gimel, there he comes out very strongly against this notion of a government official being sufficient to oversee the milking. He says that it's not true that it would work. He says, first of all, they only have to pay $500. He understands the very low price. He says it would only work if you had a scenario where the penalty would be to throw the people actually into jail, and that's not what we're talking about here. And so he says, in our time, he says, certainly, it does not help to have a government official doing the supervising. That would not make it permissible. He also brings down, with reference to this discussion, the fact that to have the government official is also something that will not work, because even if they will find something, the government officials, he claims that the owner of the dairy will be willing to bribe the official, and officials will be bribed, and again, that this is not reliable in nature. And just to go further, to show you to what degree this debate really has come, if you recall, We said that Rav Moshe said that even Yirei Shemayim, even Talmid Chachamim, rabbis and others, many people cannot be said that they do not keep the deen, and they are in fact keeping it by drinking Chalav Stam, which is under government supervision. Compare that to Rav Shtornbach. Rav Shtornbach in Tshuvos V'Nahagos that we quoted before says, Hashotim gam hayom chalav akum v'somchim al pikuach memshalti chaser bahem yirat shamayim. Unbelievable. He puts the word hayom in there, I guess, to deal with Rav Moshe. He says, but anyone today, he says, who drinks milk under supervision of the government, he says, those individuals lack a fear of heaven. Unbelievable. Rav Moshe said that some individuals definitely have a fear of heaven. And Rav Shtornbach, without making distinction as to where people live, says anyone who does that has no fear of heaven. Binagua charidim bazeh iser. And he says that those who really fear God are strict about this. And in fact, Rav Avad Yosef in his Yechav Adas, that we quoted earlier, also says, despite the fact that he brought the Pri Chadash and others who could be lenient, he does say that Pashta Hora Ba'eretz Yisrael V'Giluteha, he says certainly the teaching, the psak that has gone out in Israel and all its surrounding areas is the fact that people only drink Chalav Yisrael, although I might indicate, as was quoted, as we saw in the Har Tzvi and others, that according to the Bri Chadash, where in fact he said that the decree is relevant, where you have camels and donkeys and other animals, you have those animals in Eretz Yisrael. So it would make sense that according to everyone, in Eretz Yisrael, where you also have easy access to a Jew who could watch the milking process, that in Eretz Yisrael, for sure you have to have Chalav Yisrael, maybe according to everyone. But again, the Tshuvos and the Hagos for Shtornbach, very strong on this. And he goes on to say, "V'aleim chiyotzei behem ani korei," about such individuals. In fact, I say, "Mi sheshoteh chalav akum v'someich al machshir eino raya she'ein bo yirat shamayim." And he softens himself a little bit. He says, "Okay, someone who drinks non-kosher, non-Jewish milk," and he goes with the various heterim. He says, it's not proof that a person does not have a fear of heaven who does that. However, he says, it's people who don't have Yirat Shamayim who in fact look for such a heter. So that's his swipe at those who do not properly keep Chalav Yisrael with a Jew actually on premises. And it reminds me of a famous story with the Chafetz Chaim. They say about the Chafetz Chaim, someone once asked him, if an individual does not wear a yarmulke, is that individual like a goy? Is that individual a non-Jew? And the Chafetz Chaim responded, Chas v'shalom, a Jew does not wear a yarmulke, is not a goy. How could you say such a thing? However, a goy goes without a yarmulke. So again, that's what the Tshuvos and Hagos is holding by someone who would drink such milk that's not properly supervised by a Jew in accordance with halacha. He says even further, "V'karov einai shebizmanenu sheefshar litroach v'asig chalav Yisrael." He said further, in our time, where one is capable of trying a little bit to get chalav Yisrael, although again, if you're in cities like mine, Cincinnati, it's not so easy to get chalav Yisrael in the sense that even if you can get the milk, it doesn't mean you can get yogurt so readily and all other food items that are chalav Yisrael. So Rav Shtornbach, despite this, says, "Milvad chalav akum yesh bazech iser chil Hashem." Furthermore, you have a chil Hashem involved here, not just drinking the milk, but a chil Hashem if you drink milk that's not under proper supervision by a Jew. Shemizalzel betakanat chazal, because you are disgracing and treating lightly the takana of chazal. As opposed to Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said clearly someone who drinks such milk, chalav stam, under the government official, is not being mizalzel in this takana. Rav Shtornbach says just the opposite. And then Rav Shtornbach goes on on, he says, "V'kol shekein k'shehein b'nei Torah." He says, all the more so if someone is in the realm of b'nei Torah. And again, Rav Moshe said just the opposite, that even if you're b'nei Torah, you have every right to drink that milk, which is under the government official. Again, attacking Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a sense, is a famous story that was once told. This story I found in a book called Read and Remember on Avodah Zarah Lamed Tet Amud Bet, but it also was told after Rav Moshe Feinstein's passing. This says that the story goes that Rav Moshe was the one, of course, as we've seen, was lenient on Stam Chalav, on regular milk, with the government official. Rav Moshe once was drinking, some milk, and he was having a product that had milk in it that was made by a Gentile company that he did not find out about until after he finished eating the food. In other words, he mistakenly, because we said he was a Baal Nefesh, the Gabi Atmo, he was strict on himself and only drank real Chalav Yisrael in the traditional sense of the Jew supervising it. So he accidentally had a regular meal with this regular milk, Stam Chalav, that he was Matir. And immediately he stuck his finger down his throat, this story says, forcing him to vomit the food. This is actually different than I heard it. I originally heard it after Moshe passed away, that he naturally vomited up. And then they later told him, that they found out that the milk was not real Chalav Yisrael of the strictest perspective. But this says he stuck his finger down his throat. And again, it seems a way to discredit, somehow even Rav Moshe tried to undo what he had done, in a sense, we're being told. But Rav Tendler, when the story came out, Rav Moshe's son-in-law, clearly said, and I confirmed this when I gave this shiur at a certain bar mitzvah celebration in a hotel, and one of the guests there was Rav Moshe Tendler's son. So I was confirmed to me this statement that Rav Tendler says in no way did Rav Moshe ever do this. It would go against everything that he represented and stood for, which was the vision of a gadol who was a normal gadol. That was Rav Moshe. He was a normal person. He was a normal human being. Today we have all sorts of inyanim that to be a gadol you have to do miracles and you have to do all sorts of wondrous things and live all sorts of crazy chumras. Rav Moshe, Rav Tendler said, was not that way. He was a normal gadol. That is a gadol. Who was a greater gadol than Rav Moshe Feinstein? And yet in his normalcy, one could sense his greatness. One more comment, again, just to show how interesting this entire debate is. There's also a story I found in this Read and Remember book, same Gemara Avodah Zarah, Mamatet Amud Bet, about the Brisker Rav. So the Brisker Rav once came to a certain resort, and he asked to meet the milkmen from whom they were going to get their milk. And apparently there were two milkmen. Both were very religious. One was a Torah scholar. The other was an Am Haaretz, was an ignoramus. So what would you think the Brisker Rav would do? Wouldn't he take the Talmud Chacham? They brought the two to the Brisker Rav, and he said to the first one, "How many cows do you own?" This was the one who was the Talmud Chacham. And the Brisker Rav asked him, and he said, I own four cows. And so the Brisker Rav said, how do you get all the milk you need from just four cows? So he responded, I also buy milk from other people who own cows. So the Brisker Rav says, but everyone milks at the same time in the morning. You can't be everywhere at once. So how is it that your milk is watched with Jewish supervision? It's called Yisrael. So this Talmud Chacham answered, because I send my wife and my daughter to those places where I can't be. Now, so far this would be okay, because we saw even the Ramah said that we paskin the children are enough, certainly if his wife goes also, to ensure that Chav Yisrael, creating the proper sense of fear necessary in order for the milk to be Chav Yisrael and for not to be suspected of having improper milk in it. But then this Talmud Chacham added, to what he had just said, that his wife and his child go. He added, besides, the halacha is that if a Gentile has no kosher, non-kosher animals, like we saw in the second view of the Shari Dura on that Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamed Tet, or according, let's say, to the Pri Chadash, if there are no non-kosher animals in the flock, then the Jew doesn't have to be present anyway during the entire milking process, said this Talmud Chacham. After this conversation, the Brisker Rav told the family he was staying with, who owned the hotel where he was, I only will drink the milk from the Pashut milkman from the Yama Aretz. This one knows how to learn too much. In other words, the Brisker Rav was not into these heterim, allowing the drinking of our milk today, be it by the Pri Chadash, I'm presuming maybe by others as well, and consequently he would not drink the milk of the Talmud Chacham, only the milk, interestingly, of the Yama Aretz, of the ignoramus, who he thought would just pashut, you know, milk the cow and give it to him and finished. Just one final story I once heard with reference to the Rav. And again, I don't know what the Rav, I mean, Mustama, I presume he held that you could drink regular milk like Rav Moshe, but I don't know if he was a Baal Nefesh, I don't know. But I heard once a story, and I forgot from whom I heard the story, that Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik were once at some type of convention, maybe it was the Good Israel convention long ago when the Rav was still part of Good Israel. And so they were drinking a cup of coffee, and some milk was brought out when they were about to drink their coffee, and the milk wasn't Chal of Yisrael. So Rav Moshe wouldn't drink it. That makes sense. As we said, he was machmir on himself, even though he gave the psak, it was okay. He was a Baal Nefesh. He did not drink anything that was not traditional Chal of Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik apparently also did not drink that milk. That's why I raised the issue. What was his custom? Apparently he also did not drink that milk. And he said to Rav Moshe, here, he took an egg, a raw egg, and he opened it, and he, you know, played with it until he just got the egg white, you know, like bakers do sometimes. And then the rabbi was told, put the egg white, and took it and put it into the coffee. And he said, there, it has the same effect as if you were adding, you know, milk or cream to the coffee, and that's how he did it to avoid the Chal of Yisrael issue. I don't know if he just did that in order to help Rav Moshe out. I don't know if he held also that if you can do it, why not? So he did it for himself also in this case. But in any event, that's the story I heard, and someday someone will confirm it for me and tell me the MS of that particular vignette. But what we have seen, Rav Osai, is the great battle between the two sides concerning Chal Yisrael. We have seen that in reviewing, that the Mishnah seemed to say clearly you need a Jew to watch the milking to make sure that there is not an effort to put non-kosher milk into the milk. But then we also saw that the Gemara already says you really don't need the Jew to watch it. It just has to be that he has to instill fear into those who are doing the milking so that they would not do something improper. That's enough. From that we saw that we have views like Rav Moshe, said the Chazon Ish, and mentioned the Hartz Tzvi, who said that if you have a government official, that does instill that amount of fear, and that would be okay. Against others, or Sternbach, the Chavtas Yaakov, and others, who said this does not give sufficient fear, and consequently it's absolutely usher to utilize that heter. We also saw the view of the Pri Chadash, and the Radvaz, and others also go with this view, we said, and it's brought to Vad Yosef, and others as well, who claim that in a place where they do not have animals that are non-kosher animals that they milk, so then there was never such a fear, and that gezeira was never decreed for that area. And we brought proof, if you recall, from in various newspapers that show, for example, in America and other places, let's say where they have pigs, and the fear is you think they're gonna milk pigs, they're not going to because it's too difficult to do because you can't get a bucket under them for various reasons. It's not going to happen. Again, more room to be lenient. Despite that, as we said, despite the fact that Rav Moshe Feinstein said that anyone is Yirat Shemayim, and is even a Talmud Chacham, any such individual in B'nai Torah can also be somech on this leniency to go with the government official, again, only where you have such situation of the government official. As we said, not in countries where you don't. Nonetheless, the Rishtorenbach and others, the Chalkes Yaakov especially, are very strict. Just the opposite. They hold no one has such a right to be lenient, and anyone who does so does not have Yirat Shemayim, and B'nai Torah more than anyone should be Machmir. Indeed, the Chalkes Yaakov, if I may just conclude somewhat on a humorous note, but he's being serious, he is no doubt in his tshuvas that we have referred to before. This one's in Siman Lamed Chet. He says, Hine b'mechila kavod hagaon ha'echad. He says, with great forgiveness, please, from this great gaon who allowed the drinking of milk under government supervision to be like Kol Yisrael. Of course, he must mean Rav Moshe. I don't think he means a Chaznish. I think he means Rav Moshe. He says, after Rav Govrel Ma'od, even though this individual, this Rav, is a great, great Talmud Chacham, Aval Gama Chatam Sofer, Rav Govrel Ma'od, but also the Chatam Sofer, who said that it was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael to keep Chal of Yisrael, even in places where they did not have non-kosher animals and not have a fear, and therefore this had the din of a neder. He says, Od midor shel ga'onim muvhakim, v'yein lidchoto kakash. He says that the Chatam Sofer, sure, Moshe Feinstein was a great gaon, but the Chatam Sofer lived in an age of greater gaonim than Moshe Feinstein. And he was a gaon even among gaonim. And consequently, he says, you just can't push him off with a little straw. You just can't lightly ignore the Chatam Sofer. And so we have seen the two sides, very strong on both sides, about the union of Chal Yisrael. We should only hope, as is often not the case, but that it should be the case, that one should recognize there are two views, that Eilu ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both of these are representative of legitimate views about Chal of Yisrael, and one should follow his own particular posek and halachic authority, and if one is doing so, then he is mekayim Takanas Chazal in accordance to our Mesorah.